T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
Those two guys need some help. Yes.
Yeah.
Howard's getting old. His mind's getting a little weak, slow.
And I met his wife the other night, and he married a much younger woman.
Yes, and she's beautiful as well.
Yeah.
What happened? He must be rich.
You think?
He must.
He doesn't dress the part.
He must.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Got my hoodie and my beat-up jeans. Happy Thursday, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You want
it's
you want
cold out, by the way, just so
it
you
is,
know.
You know, it was cold yesterday. It's cold. Yeah.
It's cold. Not like wind chill cold. Like actual really, oh gosh, it's cold out today. When you open up the garage and walk outside, it's cold. That kind of, yep. Okay, so it's cold today.
Yeah. You want to blow your mind?
At 6:03, you don't even, this is like jumping into the deep end. You don't let me put my toes in the shallow end and work my way in.
Just go right for it. Yeah, somebody sent me a link, and this is, you remember when we found out that Peerless Price played for the Bills a second time?
Yeah.
It blew both of our minds.
I know, I was in denial. I don't think it actually happened. Yeah.
This one's going to be even better.
Lee Smith played here twice.
Did he really? Yeah, I guess so.
He had two stints here.
Okay, so.
I think.
This kind of fits in nicely with, I wrote an article yesterday at our website about the Bills, and you know, it's not even really trying to find a silver lining. It's just my article that I wrote was like, it is really important to remember how far the Bills have come, you know, from what they were.
Mm-hmm.
They are amazing now. They're fun. They're amazing. They're cool. You know, Bills fans are known around the league differently than they used to be. Like, you know, we live in a pretty good time to be a Bills fan. That's maybe the shortest way to say it. It's a great time to be a Bills fan,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that was not always the case. For instance, I think we now have, I have in my possession, I feel like I'm holding some sort of, you know, top secret thing I want to give you. A listener sent me, let me see who's, Bobby sent this along to me via Twitter. In 2008, the Patriots, here in Buffalo, on the way to protecting a win, they're up 13-0 against the Bills.
Yeah.
They punted to the Bills on third down.
Boy, I don't remember that.
So the first one, it's third down and one. And actually, I'll send these to Zach because, you know, mixed in with these highlights is Dan Dierdorf doing the color commentary. Remember?
Yeah,
him?
I do.
It's a Dick Geron season.
Wonderful.
So it's actually the season that Matt Cassel is their quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to say 08's when Brady got knocked out on opening day.
Yeah.
Yep.
So with Matt Cassel as their quarterback, the Patriots are up 13-0 with 5:20 and counting in the fourth quarter, and Matt Cassel does a quick kick on third down.
Mm-hmm.
It rolls down to the one. And you might think, wow, can you imagine a team punting on third down in today's game? Can you imagine that happening, the way that punting has changed? Here are the Patriots punting on third down. It's third and eight. It's not third and, you know, 35. Third and eight. And then, Howard.
Yes.
Later in the game, they did it again.
Twice in the same game they punted?
The Patriots punted on fourth down, on third down, sorry, twice in the same game.
Why were they punting on third down, by the way?
To preserve the win. And really? Dierdorf is talking about how devilishly brilliant Belichick is for punting on. They punted the ball to the Bills twice on third down.
Couldn't they have still punted on fourth down, by the way?
Yes.
All right. I just want to, like, I get protecting the lead and punting, but usually I would say I would wait till fourth down and not give up offensive plays. But
at
whatever.
Least, you know. At least the second one was an actual punter punt, but it was third down.
Twice.
Fred Jackson back here fielding this kick, and it is, I mean, of all the things, you know, to remember how bad the drought was
mm-hmm.
and how bad the Bills were. How about this for the new standard? In a home game, the Bills had the ball punted to them twice on third down.
Okay. So
in a game that they only lost by 13 points, they got shut out in this game. They were so bad offensively. The Bill Belichick felt comfortable punting the ball to them on third down.
So we're on until 10. All right, so that gives us 3 hours and 50 minutes-ish. For you to find out if anyone's ever punted on third down twice in the same game in NFL history.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one. Yeah.
Hello, Elias Sports Bureau.
Good question.
I'm talking modern era. Not like, well, you know, the 1940 Cincinnati Bulldogs. No, actually, it would have been the Canton Bulldogs in the 1920s, I believe. But anyway, yes, twice. I'll bet somebody punted on third down. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. I don't know what the scenario would lead to. A quick kick. Maybe, you know, right? But twice on third down in the same game?
Twice on third down. It's incredible. Imagine having such a terrible offense.
Yeah.
That, and by the way, this is a home game, so, you know, presumably tens of thousands of people were there for the Bills fans to see this happen. Mm-hmm. I'm watching these highlights of a third down punt, and thinking, man, are we sure this is the same universe that we live in? Well, anyway. There you go.
Do you remember the universe we used to live in? Because it's funny, you made me think. I read your article, by the way. It's available at WGR550.com. And you and I were together for almost all of the drought, have been together. We were together for all but, what, first four seasons,
five years.
Whatever? And I'm reading your article, and I'm listening to you make the point about, you know, the place we live now. And I just wrote down a few notes of what it used to be. This is what it used to be. Don't we see... Is this where I could use a Twitter analogy of the picture? We see how it started and how it is now or something like that. They do it on Twitter. So I wrote down just quick notes. Used to be, as a Bills fan, we would go into the season hoping to be in the hunt at Thanksgiving, right? We always used to make fun of it, but our lives were being on the in the hunt graphic whenever they first used it. Usually I would say right around Thanksgiving, maybe coming out of the Thanksgiving weekend, hope for in the hunt. And then we would spend December looking at the 55 combinations that had to happen for the Bills to make a wild card playoff spot and end the drought. Well, you know, they got to win three of their last four, and then these four other teams have to lose at least two. And then we would watch, how many times did we watch games? Did you and I talk about it? We would watch a good young quarterback and go, two things probably. One, man, why don't we have one of those guys? And must be great to be a fill-in-the-blank fan of this team, right? You know, like, whatever. Name a quarterback that looked really good, up and coming. We're like, God, that must be fun. Like, you don't remember it here because you weren't here for Kelly. I was, and I would always think, man, those days were fun. And then, of course, it would be meaningless games down the stretch because even though they were in the hunt, realistically, they had no shot. And then, of course, our next favorite game of end of December, early January, waiting to see who the next head coach will be and whether he will actually come in and create an offense and turn this thing around. That's where we used, that was our life for like 17 years. And you wrote about it, and I think it's appropriate, or it's you put it correctly. Now, like the team we used to be envious of, that's people looking at us. Like that's people looking at the Bills. You know, so this is why the Giants go, hey, let's bring in Joe Shane. And Joe Shane's sitting there talking about how, you know, we're going to build around Daniel Jones. We're going to help this kid. We got to find the pieces for him to, you know, to help him succeed as an NFL quarterback. That's why, you know, Miami is talking to Brian Daboll, or name another team that's talking to Brian Daboll. Like we have the stud quarterback that we used to look at and go, man, when can we get one of those guys? Well, he's here. And, you know, even if Daboll leaves or Frazier leaves, I would have a belief that McDermott, Bean, whatever, the conglomeration will be able to find a suitable replacement internally or externally. But everything that we used to make fun of, everything that we used to long for in the drought, you know, is here now. You go to camp, we're going to go to training camp. We did it this past season. We'll do it again when we get geared up in July and August, right? We're going to go to camp thinking, you know, they're a contender for the Super Bowl. This is the way it used to be. This is what it was like 30 years ago. You're experiencing it, which is awesome. It is back for the rest of us, which is awesome. And it's really amazing when you sit and think the world we used to live in and where it is now. It is almost completely opposite end of the spectrum. I wouldn't say it is complete because the Bills were never the 2-14 team all the time. 3 wins. They're always that middling.
They're worse. It was even worse.
They're in limbo.
You couldn't even get excited about, you know, a high draft pick because they picked between 8 and 12 every year.
Outside of Marcell Dareus and Mike Williams, right? I think they've been the only two top five picks in the drought. I got to think about that for a second. Anyway, they were never that bad. They were always a 6-win, a 7-win, you know, and it was just kind of in the middle, just kind of hanging out in this limbo world. It seems like it was a long time ago. It wasn't, but it does seem like it was a long time ago. But if you can take a step back, and I think that was part of the purpose of your article, if you can take a step back from the pain we've been feeling this week, you can think of where the franchise was and now how it is referred to as a model franchise. Mm-hmm. And now how you look at teams around the league. I just saw a piece today, Jeremy, from the guy who covers the Jets for ESPN.com, Rich Cimini. He's covered the Jets forever. And his piece, I didn't read it yet, but it's essentially, hey, is this going to work with Zach Wilson? Because Josh Allen's in the division for a long time. You know, New England was having, right? Those guys, the discussion in New England, how the heck do we beat this guy in Miami? Is Tua the guy? Well, if he is he good enough to beat Josh Allen at some point? Like, that's happening in our lives as well. And we used to live in the other side of things, and now we're in the penthouse, knock on wood, and hopefully not getting evicted anytime soon.
Hopefully,
so it's not lost on me. I mean, I have faith in Brandon Bean, and you know they don't have a ton of cap space. They won't be re-signing everybody. I don't think it isn't actually like last year with bringing the band back. I think there are less pieces you would look at and go, man, like Milano. Like, I was preparing to lose Milano. I don't think there's a lose Milano piece in their free agents this year. Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison, Levi Wallace, Harrison Phillips. There are good pieces. But even if, you know, guys leave in free agency, I think you're obviously at the point where you'd believe that Bean and the front office would be able to find replacements and this thing will continue. Again, in large part, you've got the most important thing. You've got a quarterback who can cover up for some possible missed draft picks or free agents that don't work out or flaws somewhere on your roster. He's that good that he will cover up flaws.
Yep.
And imperfections.
He certainly showed. That's a big part of – I mean, he covered up flaws this year.
Yes.
Right? This was not a perfect team. It was largely a team where Josh Allen was 85% of the offense or whatever that number is.
Yep.
And, you know, the conversations about being able to run the ball better. Brandon Bean at his press conference yesterday kind of said the same thing he said last year, right? That they want to be able to run it better. It's not about running it more.
Right.
That you got to be able to do different things. The threat of the run was McDermott's comment. So it's going to be another offseason of kind of saying the same stuff, except this time it's probably going to be more talked about, or at least maybe more palatable for Bills fans like me who love it when they pass, because they're going to do it in the interest of maybe not wanting Josh Allen quarterback sweeps to be a regular part of their plays.
Right.
Right? Like, they still will mix those in, but they ran a bunch of those against the Chiefs in that divisional playoff game, right?
Yeah.
And you probably don't want that many. Here it is, a fourth quarter shootout. Josh Allen is, you know, the entire team is on his back. It might be nice if he had somebody running shotgun that you could have also carry the team a little bit.
I thought it was interesting, too, if I you could tell they clearly changed the philosophy. I think a number of things happened. We always go back to that Tampa game, right? And it came up yesterday with Bean. You know, he also said it looked like the light came on at halftime in Tampa, that all of a sudden the guys, maybe they were playing tight up to that point. And he said, let's be ourselves, let's be loose. And then it went. And I thought he also pointed out, Jeremy, and I think the numbers would back this up, that it was, okay, we're going to have design runs for Josh. Yeah, he's going to scramble, but we're not going to be afraid of letting him run. Here's some design runs because you're such a great threat. And I thought Bean made a really good point in terms of Josh running. Earlier in the season, he wouldn't, like, Josh, maybe don't run as much, definitely slide. Later in the season, I'm okay with them running, and you do what you have to do because the games are big, the pressure's on, they're critical games. So I think they kind of adjusted the offense, and ironically, they didn't have to use Josh as much at the end if they didn't want to because Singletary was playing his best football of the season. But I think for sure there was a concerted effort somewhere to go, all right, Josh is just, he's so darn good, we're going to run some more quarterback sweeps. And it was a very effective play for them. But yeah, the trickle-down of Josh, someone just tweeted into both of us. How close are we till we hear, quote, big-name wide receiver willing to take a pay cut just to play with Allen for a season?
I unfortunately have poo-pooed that already.
No, but I mean, it just the concept, I don't mean this offseason and who that, but the idea of it's an attractive offense.
Yes, it is an attractive offense.
Yeah, I don't think Odell Beckham is coming here the next season.
No,
by the way.
I would say the attractive offense makes it more likely for defensive players to sign. I mean, J.J. Watt is an example here. He went to the Cardinals thinking they were a contender.
Yeah.
There's an interview with Greg Olson with Dave Portnoy, or I don't exactly know where.
Yeah,
where he talked about, and we've got the clip we can play a little bit later in the show, how he wonders, he went to play with Russell Wilson. Maybe he should have come and played with Josh Allen. Everybody from Carolina he knew was here. So, yeah, I mean, the receiver question, I mean, any receiver coming here is getting targets behind Diggs and Davis and probably Dawson Knox as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the caliber of receiver that might jump in for a bit role, but the point's not lost on me, you know. It's they are definitely a contender, and when so-and-so hits the market, whether that's Beckham or not that he's going to sign here, but he wanted to go somewhere he could win, and the offense was attractive. He went to the Rams. You know, Von Miller probably was trying to pick where he wanted to go and wanted to go to a contender. Well, any conversation about wanting to go to a contender, yes, the Bills are definitely in that conversation on a level definitely above where it was last year when they were in the AFC Championship game.
Oh, I think for sure they took a step this year. They didn't take a step in terms of one loss record or how deep they went into the playoffs, but in terms of how the quarterback is playing, the sustainability of this offense, the consistency on the defense, whatever, and the image. Yeah, I think this is a team where, for sure, you tell your agent, hey, can you call Buffalo and see if they're interested? And whether it's offensive or defensive free agent, you'd talk to your agent, go, why don't you call the Bills? You know, because you know, if you show up here, you've got a chance to be in the Super Bowl next season. So that's good. And who knows? Maybe that's it's not a hometown discount. Maybe it's a they're really good discount that someone comes here for 1 year and says, I'll play. Okay, instead of a receiver, a Von Miller type, whatever. Some edge rusher, some really good edge rusher that says, all right, not going to get what I want in the market. Tell you what, let me go to there for 1 year. Going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl, maybe put up some good numbers, back in the market, boom, we'll get another contract down the road. You never know. That might play out this offseason. Anyway, the Bills are in that discussion now.
I feel like those contracts do happen, but they never happen at a discount. All happen as, sure, okay, 1 year, you won't have to commit for long term, but those deals are almost never discounted. I mean, J.J. Watt got paid big money, and people wondered if it was too much. You know, if you're going to pay that player, I guess I don't want the Bills thinking they're going to get by with discounts. Because they probably, you know, it's expensive. That's the other challenge. Now that Allen's making the money that he is, I hope maybe that those discounts do come because you're going to need some good players that are eating up less of the cap now that Allen's making, you know, the big, big bucks.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons, you know, we talked yesterday about Cole Beasley, and Brendan Bean said he expects him back. So I expect a restructuring. If you expect him back, I expect the contract to be restructured personally. You know, They can.
You'd have to add on a year then, or so. You'd have to do something like tack on another year or whatever.
Well, they might just think it's worth doing and taking the hit next year because the cap goes up, you know, every year.
Right.
So whatever that hit would be next year, we'll see. I'm surprised to commit to Beasley already.
I was too.
When you can save $6 million and the idea of upgrading in that position is not crazy. You know?
No, and you also have a functional piece to play the slot right now. In what I think is an ascending player in Isaiah McKenzie. I was a little surprised by that, too. I figured as part of whatever maneuvering they're going to do to create cap space, I checked SpotTrack the other day. I don't know. I think it's like $10, $11 million in cap space. Not a ton. I figured what of the moves they're going to make, he would be one. Because as you said, it's an easy move. It opens up $6 million, and you have a guy who you could put into the slot now in that position and save a lot of money. If by the way, assuming you re-sign Isaiah McKenzie, he is also an unrestricted free agent this offseason. Let's see. Oh, all right. Want to get some calls. Want to talk more about Jeremy's article. Sorry, it's Thursday. We kind of hopped right into it. And, of course, we're still we'll talk about some of the stuff we heard Brandon Bean yesterday. No, you know what? It's funny. I'm not. As the week has gone on, I'm really getting better. But as I told you, Jeremy, I know it's going to be a crappy weekend. I'm sitting here getting ready for the show, and I'm feeling good. You know, it could be the energy drink. I'm not going to, you know, maybe it is a substance I happen to be on right now legally, but I'm feeling better the more we get separated from it. And then this morning, again, before we were on, they were talking about Joe Burrow. They were playing a clip about Burrow from when Paul Feinbaum. And they were setting up, it was a discussion about Burrow and how he did and how he's doing with the Bengals and all that. Whatever. And I'm listening, like, okay. And then who's the guy? Jay Wright? No, I forget the guy who anchors. Doesn't matter. Sorry, buddy. You do a nice job. Anyway, they play the clip. They finish the discussion, and he tags it with, and Joe Burrow and the Bengals getting set to play the Chiefs. And at that little moment, the pain came back. I'm like, yeah. Oh, why isn't he saying, and Joe Burrow and the Bengals are getting set to travel to Buffalo to play Josh Allen and the Bills on Sunday? So I am getting better, but as we get closer to the weekend and – we've been so engrossed in our world here, I have not really paid attention to previews of the conference championships. The more I hear people talk about the AFC matchup and then game day, I'm sure I'm going to slip back into the really dark spot, and I'll get out of it eventually. I don't know when, but I'll get out of it eventually. And I mean, Brandon Bean's in the same dark spot based on what we were hearing from him yesterday. You know, I mean, there was definitely at least one time where it looked like he was getting a little emotional. And, you know, might have been fighting back some emotions to try and – might have been when he was talking about the fans and the great fans that the Bills have. And you could see it was getting to him a little bit. And, he talked about how he hasn't watched films of the game yet, just some clips at the end. And that something about how he's not in a good spot right now. So I can relate. But I'm getting better. But I think –
especially, I mean, he knows what happened.
Yes, right. He has talked to Sean McDermott.
The whole, us talking about
scoop.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm getting better, but I think in the natural progression for most of us, as you improve over the week, I'm sure it'll get tougher again over the weekend. 803-0550 to join us this morning. We will get connected with our fans. We'll start things off with Bob and Tonawanda. Bob, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Yes, I got the solution to the overtime coin toss. The team that's in possession of the ball going into overtime retains possession of the ball. You can click, that means they can click the clock down to zero, you know, throw the touchdown pass or kick a field goal, and it's sudden death. You can force into sudden death. I emailed the commissioner, Roger Goodell, yesterday about it. And
Let me know if you hear back.
Oh, yeah, I hope to hear back.
All right.
So just to be clear, it's sudden death, and the fourth quarter doesn't end. It keeps going.
Yeah. But, okay, I cleared the line. Sorry about that. But if he said the team that had the ball, you said you had the ball at the end of the fourth quarter, you keep it. Yeah, but what if you kick a field goal at the end to tie it, like with no time left because you're about to lose the game?
Right, they would kick off to the Bills, I guess.
Oh, okay, so that is the continuation. I see, right, because you would get the ball back after their field goal anyway. All right, yeah, you're basically it's a fifth quarter. Nothing changes.
Right.
You're
and
continuing
if the Chiefs
the
kick the game-tying field goal with – I don't know if he wants that.
Yeah.
Let's not do the overtime stuff today. I can't take it today. Yeah. And thanks for calling, but I hate that idea.
Yeah.
I hate any overtime plan that changes the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter is not broken. We don't need to change the overtime. We don't need to make it where if it's tied and the clock runs out, you just keep going and you just don't have an end to the game. You start a new quarter. Like, you know, the difference between the first and the second quarter. That fundamentally changes the fourth quarter. It will make it worse. Right now we have – do you get rid of the two-minute warning then? Right? Like, why
no,
have a two-minute warning?
Yeah, right. Then they won't get
Am
rid of that.
Am I saving my timeouts for a part of the game, and now the time actually doesn't run out? The clock just keeps going.
Yeah.
We don't need to change the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the two-minute warning, isn't it more about just another commercial break than anything else?
Yes, but it's also, you know, time is running out. And Right, it's a commercial break, but what has it become?
It's a built-in timeout.
It's a built-in strategy.
Yeah, because the clock is going to stop.
You know you're going to get it. You use it.
Right, around the 2 minutes, sure. And you know everything will cease at 1:56, you know no matter what. There's going to be a break in the game.
It is funny how we just accept that as part of what happens.
The two-minute warning.
Games have been won and lost because of that one extra stoppage.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just created out of thin air for a commercial break. Yeah.
How many times have you looked at a game, you've watched a game approaching the two-minute warning, and whether you're leading or trailing or whatever the case may be, all right, well, they've got two timeouts and the two-minute warning, so they can stop the clock three times on defense, right? We're always factoring in the two-minute warning because it's an extra timeout for somebody, basically.
It is a great example of how, you know, if something is suggested, that's cheesy. But if it's existed for a long time, it's like, oh, yeah, the two-minute warning. You know, what if you proposed a four-minute warning today? Like, what? Why? What for? You know, it's just another commercial break. We'll just stop the clock with 4 minutes to go.
I love the two. By the way, what's the warning part?
Right.
Like, is there danger coming? It's a two-minute warning. What are we being warned about? The game is running out? I mean, there's less time. Hey, just so you know, there's only 2 minutes left in the game. We just wanted to warn you. We'll walk over to the sidelines to the two coaches.
I've got to find out the history of the two-minute warning now.
I have no idea what it is. I assume the networks went to the league at some point and said, we need more commercial breaks. Let's come up with – okay, I'll tell you what. We will build in a automatic break around 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Were coaches just not paying attention? And they blow the whistle. I'm like, Bill, hey, Bill, 2 minutes left in this game.
Some guy's taking his time on offense and are like, dude, you should not be huddling up. There's only 2 minutes left. I just wanted to warn you. The game's running out. Okay. Hurry up, offense, boys.
It was honestly a built-in television break.
I would assume, right?
To serve as tension-building time. That's it.
Okay, makes sense. Sure. Okay, so I think it makes sense.
League that just invented a two-minute warning.
To build intensity.
To build tension.
Yep.
Can't figure out, I said no overtime today, but here I am on overtime. Can't figure out an overtime format?
Yeah.
Just make one up.
Why not? You made up a break for no reason other than to build tension in the game. 803-0550 to join us. Okay, if you're on hold, hang on. We've got more of your calls coming up. We will talk about Brandon Bean today, a lot of the stuff that he went over in a more than one-hour-long news conference. It's also available on demand if you want to listen to it at WGR550.com on the show today. Sal Capaccio joining us at 7. Chris Brown, lead journalist, BuffaloBills.com, and, of course, from One Bills Live. He will join us at 8. And Dan Graziano from ESPN will join us. If you read Dan's work, you know that all season long he was on the Bills bandwagon, predicting them to go to the Super Bowl. We'll get his thoughts on the Bills, the season, the conference championships. That's going to be at 9 this morning. So let's go. We'll talk to all of you over the course of the day here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Stay tuned. Zach is going to one-up Jeremy's Belichick punting stat. Brandon Bean, Bills GM, meeting with the media yesterday, end of the season news conference, spoke for over an hour. If you want to hear it, we've got it for you in on-demand audio at WGR550.com. Highlights include the GM saying he anticipates Cole Beasley being back. He does have 1 year left on his contract. Bean said Star Lotulelei was not the same player after he got COVID before the Jets game. Said the Bills probably won't be big spenders in free agency, but they will be looking outside for additions. He said he will pay attention to the cornerback market in free agency. Also said the backup quarterback is very important position for the Bills because of the way Josh Allen plays. They would love to have Mitchell Trubisky back if he doesn't get what he's looking for in free agency. The Bears are doing a second round of interviews for their head coaching opening. At this point, nothing is scheduled for either Brian Daboll or Leslie Frazier. Sabres goalie Aaron Dell got a 3-game suspension from the league last night. The Sabres back in action in Arizona Saturday night. Hey, they played Colorado Sunday night in Denver. The Avs have won 17 straight home games. They picked up number 17 last night, beating Boston. Bonner lost to George Mason. Madison Keys eliminated in the semifinals of the Australian Open. Hey, the Pacers scored 126 points last night. Problematic because they gave up 32 more than they scored. Those are your Paddock Chevrolet headlines. Visit, that's 126 plus 158. Those
also,
are your, yeah.
I think the Avalanche lost McKinnon.
Yes, he got
hit by
Taylor Hall. He was all bloodied, right? He got a stick to the face or something.
Yeah,
I didn't see like if there's a time frame or anything.
Yeah, he was
he was like a bloody pulp.
He was in tough.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Those are your Paddock Chevrolet headline. Visit paddockchevrolet.com. Celebrating 87 years of service. Next update at 7 o'clock.
I haven't slept much. I've thought about it a lot. It's painful. Still going through it. You know, I haven't watched the film, to be honest with you. I watched a little bit of the last plays. I can't watch it right now. I'm not in a good spot. I will. We'll review it. We'll learn from it. I promise you that. There's a lot of pain in this city, and there's a lot of pain in that building over there. We're going to do everything in our power to not let that happen again.
Brandon Bean, some of his comments from yesterday. We'll get to the Belichick stat. We'll get to some calls. I don't know why. I do still have the Bills KC game on my DVR at home, not anticipating watching it again. I don't know why I haven't deleted it. So, Jeremy, Zach has an addition to your Bill Belichick third down punting against the Bills stat.
Okay.
Well, he's done it a total of 4 times.
Punting on third down?
Yep. He did it in 2012 against the Denver Broncos. I think Josh McDaniels would have been the coach that year. And then he did it again in 2013, also against the Buffalo Bills.
So 2 different games against the Bills, he's punted on third down. Twice in the one game in 08 and another one in 2013.
Yep, 2013. Wow.
Can you believe as recently as 2013 punting on third down?
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm laughing. I do think there is an element of, oh, my God, that's funny.
It's incredible.
Yeah. 3 times, twice against the same team. From what Zach could tell, we have yet to find an example of a team punting on third down.
Yeah,
he's the same game.
He's the only one who's done it twice.
Yes.
And then there's a ton of times in the 80s.
Yeah. Good stuff. 803-0550. Well, go to Mike in Hamburg. And Mike, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a question. When Gabe Davis scored his 4th touchdown to make it 35-33, anybody asked, why didn't they go for a 2-point conversion? The reason is that if they would have made a 2-point conversion, it would have been up by 4. There would have been no talk about a squib kick or kicking it out of the end zone. It would have been a lot more difficult for Kansas City to get a touchdown than just go for the field goal. And also, my secondary question is, if they would have done that, would have that taken any time off the clock going for a 2-point conversion? Because it would take a couple seconds. What are your thoughts about that?
Clock doesn't move. This is, I think this is the new Christian Wade thing or something like that. The clock doesn't go on a PAT or a 2-point try. It you don't burn time on the extra point.
And we did talk about it. If they had gone for 2, I mean, we could play this out a couple different ways.
It wasn't. I don't believe it was asked in the Sunday night press conference with Sean McDermott.
But we've talked about it.
Yeah.
And if they don't get it, then they're only up by 2 and the Kansas City kick wins it.
Right.
Which I think you could make a case that maybe they play defense differently. If they think we cannot, under any circumstances, let them get in field goal range.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't surprised that he went for the extra point.
Not at all.
He's going to trust his defense to make a stop with 13 seconds left. So I'm not surprised at all he went for the field goal because he was pretty sure he felt, they were not going to be able to get to the point where they'd have Harrison Butker kick a field goal. So let's go to John in Hamburg next. John, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a quick note about the 2-minute warning and the history of it. It goes way back to the early days of the NFL where there were no stadium clocks. There were no electronic things of any kind in the stadium. And the referee kept the time on the field on a stopwatch in his pocket. And so it eventually evolved where the coaches were requesting to at least to know a couple of minutes ahead of the game ending. So that's where it came from. It was way back to the beginning of the league.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. I appreciate that. That's pretty funny, actually. I always thought though, there, you know, if you ever watch like old time games or maybe movies about old time games, I always thought there was a clock that almost looked like a regular like house clock or whatever, like a regular time clock, and you would. But yeah, okay, right, sure. There would not have been anything surely digital that would you'd look up and see it ticking 3, 2:30, 2:25. Even if there was just a normal clock, you'd have it would be tough, for, I guess, for you to figure out where the 2 minute warning was. So, thank you for the history note. That's cool. I did not know that. Let's see. We'll go to Rich in Lakeview next. Rich, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
You know, I think what still galls me after 4 days, that a professional sporting event still galls me after 4 days. I mean, whether they win or not, we're still all going to work. We're still all having to lead our regular lives. And, you know, it's the vicarious enjoyment we get out of it. And, you know, we talked about the 13 seconds. First of all, as a fan, and I hopefully, you know, if they're listening, and I know that, you know, sometimes they do, that it felt good that Bean shares our pain. You could tell he was hurt. That wasn't acting. That wasn't sports speech. You know, those guys were just better than us. They're two teams, you know, great athletes. And it wasn't even 13 seconds. If our coaching staff would have found a way, you know, to get 4 seconds off that clock, I mean, go for it on fourth down in the third quarter. I thought we gave away our third quarter offensive plays by becoming conservative, I think, trying to run off the clock. I thought Tyreek Hill's touchdown was very similar to the Tampa Bay overtime touchdown running across the middle. I mean, so there's so many of them. It's just that it's so definite, so finite. And it was just refreshing to have people share the pain. I know you guys, you know, Jeremy, you're a soccer guy too, and that whole Ted Lasso scene where he said what's worse than, you know, feeling pain is feeling it alone. And I think, you know, Bean went a little Ted Lasso on us, and it's no staff for it. You know, the pain's still there. But yesterday, I'm not watching the Super Bowl. I'm not. I don't want to turn on football. I don't want to see another State Farm commercial or Head Show. I don't want to see those. But today, you know, I'm looking forward to July 31st. And, you know, it's good that Bean is one of us, but he's got to be better than one of us, you know. So that's enjoyment. And thanks for the therapy. I think I owe you a couple days of $10 copays to get through the counseling. So
all right.
Have a great off season.
On this point, I like this point a lot, Howard, because, you know, when we talked about McDermott's comments and whatever, you want to – I think there are a lot of fans that want to know that the people running the team care about the team as much as you do.
Yeah.
And that also has not always been the case.
Right.
You know? And if I'm talking about, like, the biggest problems with the Sabres are starting a new era. I ranted about the Sabres for 4 years asking, is anybody going to do anything? Does anybody care? You know? And some of my biggest and most darkest Sabres moments are when the team is floundering and the GM says snarkily, the fans want a coaching change? Like, doesn't know. And, you know, Ralph Kruger would say, I don't really hear the fans' complaints. They don't get to my desk.
I forgot about that.
Seriously. I'm telling you.
Sorry, I'm laughing. Not that it's funny. You know what I'm saying? It's unbelievable laughing.
It's right. And I would come out and say, why do they think that this sounds good to say that they don't hear it?
Right.
So, you know, everybody wants different things. I am like the caller just makes the point. Like, if that works for you, then I get it, because you care a lot. You invest a lot. You know, I tell you, like, I watch the Sabres every night. Does the GM? I don't even know if he does.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything. They're letting another season die. And, you know, here you have the opposite of that. So, again, that's old Sabres management. You get the impression that they're under new management now and things are going better. I think they do a better job of, you know, presenting themselves to their fans these days, which does matter. It really does.
I do think both. Yeah, they care. The head coach, the GM. You know, McDermott on his Zoom call talked about how this game was going to be in his gut for a long time. I said, Bean looked like he was getting choked up when he was talking about the fans. I thought it was really, you know, he mentioned the Jacksonville game. So, you know, he brought up the fact that after the Jacksonville game was over, Bills fans in the stadium were cheering, and Bean's like, I would have been booing us. I have no idea. Like, they were cheering us, and I'd be booing. And he talked about the other night coming back from Kansas City. The fans were at the airport, and he said he wished he could hug each fan. So Yeah. I mean, as much as we're hurting, think about it from their standpoint. Like, Beans put together, he's put together a team he thought was going to the Super Bowl. I know your caller said they're better than Kansas City's better than the Bills. I wouldn't say that. I mean, they won the game, but the Bills were 13 seconds away from us saying, hey, the Bills are better than Kansas City. They beat them twice this season, both times in Arrowhead, once in the playoffs. So I don't know about that, and I just think Bean, McDermott is going to live with that game for a long time. A long time. I'm not sure anything short of winning a Super Bowl will get this thing out of his head. Right? Imagine his night when he puts his head on the pillow and maybe the day is over. He's probably still thinking about 13 seconds. You were that close. So I've never, you know, with those guys, I don't need Bean to actually say the words, I'm sorry we didn't get it. Because I think those guys, obviously, you come that close and you're this good and you know, I'm not saying the window closed, but every season is different. It resets. There are no guarantees in September. I think those guys are absolutely in pain this week. I know I am. So.
Yeah. And you know, one other thing, you wonder if, as McDermott approaches the offseason, like last offseason, it was all about how, you know, he wasn't aggressive enough on some fourth downs. And what did they do? They went for some fourth downs. In the opening drive of the game, they went for it twice. I wonder if, you know, their analytics folks there, maybe they've got somebody in the building that's like the fourth down pusher, you know, like, hey, you did better. And then they're ready to talk to him again, but they're thinking, like, maybe I'll wait a couple weeks because, you know, I want to bring up that fourth.
The fourth from the 34, the fourth of the 49.
I don't think he's ready to hear about that yet, so I'll text him in a couple of weeks.
It's where your report card is. It's not an E for excellent. It's G for good or maybe A for above average, but you can't quite go to E yet, and you don't want to point it out why. 803-0550, you're on hold. Hang on. We got more of your calls coming up. We'll talk about the season with you, Brandon Bean, his comments yesterday, and whatever else is on your mind with the Bills. We're still recapping the season. I know folks want to talk about the offseason, the coordinator stuff going on, to see if Dable or Leslie Frazier are leaving. We'll get into all of it. So you can join us anytime this morning, WGR. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us. Sal coming up in a little, like 10 minutes-ish. You know, we're late. I'll get connected with our fans, sorry. We'll get to Jamestown next. Rick, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to talk, you know, in the playoffs, your weaknesses always come to the top. Ours just kind of happens to be in the coaching decision-making area. So, I mean, you can have a really great coach like we do, but then, you know, those coaching decisions are just – kind of there. Maybe we need some kind of somewhat of an advisor, but I mean, I hope in the long run that this really morphs McDermott into, you know, those coaches that you can't stand playing like Belichick and Vrabel, because they give you such an advantage in those facets, and they're, you know, they're always a step ahead of the other team. So hopefully that can happen. Then I just also wanted to talk on kind of some inconsistencies, you know, throughout the year. We get, you know, coordinator position does a pretty good job most of the time, but we get those series where, you know, it's a quick three and out. We had those three runs right out of the three and out, and then you know, quick pass, and then two more runs on second and third down. You know, Belichick never, when he had Brady, you know, Brady's always got the ball when it's coming down to anything in the whole importance of the game. I mean, we could have it could not even have been that close if on a couple of those series, you know, Allen had the ball like he did all game. So that's another facet right there. And then as far as offensive coordinators, just got another one idea. Todd Haley, he was one of the most innovative offensive coordinators in Kansas City, or I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. And then he went to Kansas City and coached for a couple of years. But anyway, I mean, that guy's kind of out there in the market. He knows how to use high-power weapons like he did in Pittsburgh. He kind of set what was in place for Kansas City before Reed came in a little bit. So those are my couple points. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
The offensive coordinator conversation, you know, that's probably the next really big thing to monitor and talk about, because I thought there was a good point. I forget who made it. But whatever. I'm sure that a lot of people have made it. You know, you and I talked yesterday, Howard, about how the offensive coordinator position is one that comes with a ton of pressure, because – we know Josh Allen can be great, is great. We know Stephon Diggs is great. Last year, Diggs wins the receiving title. This year, Allen shows the world he's a freak show in the playoffs. Singletary had a strong close to the season. Gabriel Davis's second half of the season is like a breakout for him. And you're an offensive coordinator, so okay, come on in, and this thing better hum right away. Mm-hmm. You know, we know it's got the pieces. So do you just promote from within, or do you look around and say, no, 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 what I want is a guy that has been great before that maybe wants to get back to a head coaching post, and we'll hire somebody that is going to be proven. Like Todd Haley is a name. I'm not necessarily sure I like that idea. He was not good in Pittsburgh, right? Roethlisberger hated him.
Yeah, I don't think they got along. But
Maybe that's a Roethlisberger thing. But the point's not, you know, it's not about Haley specifically for me. The caller's right. Like, getting someone that has done it before,
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking like how Bruce Arians bounced around and worked with a bunch of great quarterbacks. And, you know, not that he's the one that's going to take the job, just that getting somebody that's proven and you think can even improve things on where they were, not just like, oh, boy, who can replace Brian Daboll and the work he's done. Who can improve on it?
Yeah, I do think there's something to some of the other points about, yeah, there were times the other night when they ran the ball, we're like, why? So a couple third and twos, I would not have run the ball, and they did. So I think there were moments, sure, where I thought, you know, you should always lean on the pass and maybe more than you already are. I think with the OC, if Dable leaves and it's not just an automatic promote Dorsey, philosophically, what is Sean McDermott thinking? Does he look at the offense and go, let's keep it exactly the way it is? You always talk about the stats about their passing rate in neutral, right? Early downs, neutral situations. They're first in the league. Does he want that? Does he want to continue? Does he want another guy to operate it with that mindset? Does he want to work in more runs? Not balance, but they didn't lean on the run enough over the course of the season. If they're looking for a new OC, I keep thinking, again, the head coach is making that hire. What does he want in the new offensive coordinator? Philosophically, is he looking for something different? Or I need a guy to stay the course? And I don't have an answer for you, but that's what I'd be wondering. What does McDermott want in the next OC? Again, if it's not just, hey, we love Ken Dorsey. He knows Josh Allen. He knows the offense, continuity. Boom, bump him up. 803-0550 to join us. If you're on hold, hang on. We got Sal coming up in the next segment. We'll work in your calls with him too. So we're going to get to everybody as we talk Bills football with you this morning here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.